come to her sudden senses. A late chickadee hops into a rough-stacked woodpile, tucks herself in, and lives. Imagine this land laying its blessing hands on the capped head of a lone bird. This, of course, raises many questions. What have we been spared for?
Poet Samantha Deflitch is the author of the recently published Confluence, a marvelous collection of poems that bring to vivid life Sam's home turf of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, its back roads and bridges, state lines and amusement parks, as well as the deeply entwined lives of family, neighbors, and friends. A large love flows through Sam's work, strong as the rivers that merge and run through the city of her remembering and her imagining. Sam's second book, Should the Alleluia Return to Us in Ordinary Time, is not out yet, but it's a National Poetry Series finalist. Her poems have appeared or are forthcoming in Iron Horse Literary Review, Colorado Review, and the Missouri Review, among many others. She's a recipient of fellowships and awards from the Martha's Vineyard Institute of Creative Writing, the Massachusetts Poetry Festival, and the University of New Hampshire, where she completed her MFA. Sam lives in Portsmouth with her corgi dog, Moose. Welcome to the 8th episode of the Rice Pudding Poetry Podcast, a project of Rice Public Library in Kittery, Maine. I'm your host, Kimberly Green, and I'm so glad to welcome Sam to the show, along with pianist Mike Effenberger and community readers Rebecca Hennessy, Asher Littlefield, Jean Stevens, and Nicole Benevenia. Instead of gathering at the library, we're recording this show from our makeshift sound studio on Chauncey Creek. But we miss being with you, miss sharing poetry and music together, listening side by side in our seats, sometimes closing our eyes to hear more deeply. And we miss passing hand to hand the plates of sweet cookies and pastries that Greta Evans bakes for us. That rice pudding is the soul of this one. The theme Sam has selected for this show, Harvest, makes me think not only about the abundant and abundantly beautiful season we're in, but also about our moment in history. The pandemic's not over, but I think we are beginning to see a light at the end of the long, dark tunnel that has been COVID. I wonder what we'll harvest from this time, what we'll gather up and carry with us into a new season. What will we store? And what will we share? Sam's reading follows pianist Mike Effenberger's rendition of the gospel tune, Just a Closer Walk with Thee. Mike's a recording and performing artist whose work draws on gospel, American minimalism, jazz, and 20th century music. He plays throughout New England with a variety of bands, including Weird Turn Pro, which plays his original music. He also plays nationally with Soggy Po' Boys and appears on countless recordings from independent releases to larger labels. Mike, lead the way from here. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Samantha DeFlitch, and today I'll be reading poems that relate to the word harvest. I decided on the word harvest, having just completed an interview with the Kenyon Review for their Poetry Today section. In the interview, I focused heavily on process and how it is more important than product for me. I'm very process-oriented, and process takes lots of different forms for me. Reading and rereading books, setting them down and picking them up again months or sometimes years later, walking the dog, walking myself, doing dishes, and my work too. I work a pretty standard 9-to-5, so if I don't find process in that, then I'm out an enormous amount of time. So I'm interested, for the purpose of this reading, in envisioning process as a type of harvest. Jeanette Winterson wrote, "What is visible, finished books, are underpinned by the fertility of uncounted hours." I think that process and the harvest happens in ways we don't often consciously register, but that involve an enormous amount of often underappreciated and uncompensated work and labor. So assembling this reading for me turned into an examination of harvest as a range of process. There are poems that follow from months, years of tending, those that surprise or seem to spring from the page, unexpected and unintended, and those that might not have seemed viable at all, but which in the end nourished. The first poem I'll read was recently published in Barron magazine and adheres to a more traditional interpretation of the theme harvest. Confessional. This is what happened. I found the wren frozen stuck to the ground, and I kept on moving. The onion snow came too late this year. The hard freeze took out the plums. Some farmer kept the coal barrels burning through the night. Another lit half his land on fire to save the grapes. Some theologians think God gave us grapes, but not wine, so we too could find joy in creation. See, we make bread to be torn apart hot, hot and full of yanked up wheat sheaf. We love the dog, even though we know, be it love or oats, we know it when we plant it. Most things don't make it out alive. This is just to say, I'm not a theologian or a farmer or even the woman who scooped up the wren's body, tucked it in a plastic bag, and kept it in her freezer between the berries and winter greens, waiting patiently for the final thaw to bury it in soft earth. I'm just a girl with an emergent deer in her cupped palms, a girl saying, "Look, this is what I have created with my grief. This is what love has made out of me." This next poem feels very process-focused to me. It's the first poem of my second book, and to me, it almost feels like I had to write the entire first book just to write this poem. Beneath the exam table. Slowly up, I lifted my hand. Under my hand was a city, and under the city was Marge's house. Under this house was rust. Under the rust was my hand, and the crack in my hand was long, and it was very firm, and it was big as a dynasty. It was the color of the Ohio. Remember what Marge made? It was like a casserole with pork, corn, and potatoes. Does anyone have the recipe? It was very good, and she served it with canned pears. It was very good, and it tasted like back alley bridge in the church basement under an old crucifix. I'm serious. If anyone has Marge's recipe for pork, corn, and potatoes, send it to me. I'm not hard to find. I am also under the old crucifix, asking for a miracle. A miracle is like when Mark, who's working the St. Agnes kitchen during the fish fry, gives you extra halushki at the end of the night. Funny to have this whole city under my hand. St. Agnes in Irwin, and Marge's house in Mount Pleasant, the Strip District and Hot Metal Street Bridge, my mother's kitchen and its window, looking over the snow-tracked backyard where my father stares at the cracked sky. It's a very small palm. I cross myself. Gently, I set my hand back down so as not to disturb Uncle Don, who has just sat down to play cards at the folding table in Marge's house. There is a nut roll long time cooling on the counter. Uncle Don shuffles. This would be his last winter, and he was again going to rig the score. The next poem is truly a poem of surprise for me. An unexpected and unintended harvest about a subject matter very close to me, but I don't write about very often. So this is Third Sunday of Advent. A fox, light stepping so as not to break the snowpack. A sudden coyote, the startling car. Treeline takes them all up. Only the forest knows which of these three will see the dawn. Quick blue dusk tears open the skyline, and even the chickadees, long time feeding at the suet, count themselves among the going. Me, I have gone and done the work of the day. Dishes needed washed, some loose frames hammered more firmly into the eastern wall. Cast iron got seasoned. I am warm enough. Already the tamaracks, their blurring boughs, all that endure, floodlit by headlights of the coming and the going, and even some of the already gone. It's hard land, iced over and dim, indifferent. But even the north gets its melt and miracle. Come to her sudden senses. A late chickadee hops into a rough-stacked woodpile, tucks herself in, and lives. Imagine this land laying its blessing hands on the capped head of a lone bird. This, of course, raises many questions. What have we been spared for? Dusk curls the world in at the edges. We are all rushed together in the thaw. Behind the location of this sudden miracle, down the sloping blue and pine, the swift river rises to carry us the rest of the way. So this next poem is the title poem of my second book, and I like to call it a quintessential Sam poem. It gathers words, lines, and sometimes whole stanzas from poems that have come before it and reframes them in a new context. So to me, this is an extremely intentional type of harvest and a process that is very central to my understanding of poetry. Should the Alleluia return to us in ordinary time? 1. These days, the hours are days awaiting the intercession of saints. See how the bodies slouch. See how the gas station hunkers down, iced over, dispensing prophecy. Some old woman tops off her tank with tremors for fingers, filling. Attendant, I am this old woman. Make me a complete triangle and point me toward the voice of my father. Before I am rushed together with the slush, someone will sing for me. 2. Here the turnpike toll-taker heralds the going, she the line between tar and I am. Alone, a deer with its dragging leg and headlights. All things yowl at the edge. The last berm is the toughest clear. May the salted blacktop rise, swift and holy, to carry us the rest of the way. 3. Someone watched you from their window. You found the wren prone at dawn, frozen, stuck to the sidewalk, and you kept on moving. You set the mouse bucket and lost count. Once there was a saint for these enduring things, a man who placed his hand in the mouth of a wolf who didn't know the glue trap. These days you hide your head beneath a quilt and hope to make confession, unwieldy, lumbering through this earth. 4. The boy begs good passage. The boy places 3 coins on the eyes of a stiff-legged deer. Go, says the boy. This is the dismissal. 5. These days we put the snow wherever we find room. A wire fence collapses at the car dealership. A mother down the row shakes in her plastic dish tub as night gives way to night, holding breath for the thaw and wren making loud, declaring, chin up, small world. The weathermen get it right, always. Warm days arrive, then the frost, a year chasing its tail. The alleluia hitches itself to our lives and drags behind us, clanging. And the last poem I'll read is a much, much loved poem. I like to call it my Baba O'Reilly. It's a poem that nourishes each time I read it and each time I end a reading on it. And I think it's a poem that helps me through the long winter. To lead a pig skyward. I read a pig can't look up. That you've got to gently tilt their heads back if they're going to take in the night skies. I never led a pig skyward late at night in Pennsylvania. Earthbound is probably better. We all start getting ideas when we look up. And the pigs, they always seemed so pleased where they were, rooting in soft earth. No need to look up for God when the holy was there, beneath their trotters, cool below the autumn archer that was rising lightly on the eastern horizon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike, for your lovely interpretation of composer William Howard Doane's Near the Cross. And thank you, Sam, for your generous presence and poems, their recursive images and motifs of birds, hands, rivers, woodpiles, wolves, coins, and mud. You can buy or order Sam's book, Confluence, published by Broadstone Books, through your local bookstore, or you can buy directly from the publisher at www.broadstonebooks.com. The harvest continues now with our four community readers, each of whom has selected a poem that speaks in a unique way to Sam's theme. Let's listen.
Hello, my name is Rebecca Hennessy, and I am from Elliott, Maine. I will be reading the poem September Tomatoes by Karina Borovich. Kimberly shared this poem with me, maybe, because I am a garlic farmer and have a particular relationship with soil and seed and harvest. Harvest is the process of gathering in, holding close, sorting through, and putting up. It's preserving the promise of the seed planted. And seeds are as much memory as they are possibility, as much a record as they are wild and unknown. September tomatoes. The whiskey stink of rot has settled in the garden, and a burst of fruit flies rises up when I touch the dying tomato plants. Still, the claws of tiny yellow blossoms flail in the air as I pull the vines up by the roots and toss them in the compost. It feels cruel. Something in me isn't ready to let go of summer so easily, to destroy what I've carefully cultivated all these months. Those pale flowers might still have time to fruit. My great-grandmother sang with the girls of her village as they pulled the flax, songs so old and so tied to the season that their very sound seemed to turn the weather.
My name is Asher Littlefield. I'm the library assistant at Rice Public Library. My wife and I went apple picking on our first date and got engaged 2 years later after another afternoon spent picking apples at the same orchard. That first time that we had gone, though, I came home with two bags full of apples that I assumed I would turn into an apple pie or an apple crisp or something. I had high hopes and too much ambition, and the fruit flies I was fending off about a week later were evidence that I did not, in fact, follow through on that. I've always loved apple picking and apples, so between all of that and understanding trying to harvest too many, this poem really got my attention when I first found it. After Apple Picking by Robert Frost. My long two-pointed ladder's sticking through a tree toward heaven still, and there's a barrel that I didn't fill beside it. And there may be two or three apples I didn't pick upon some bough, but I am done with apple picking now. Essence of winter sleep is on the night, the scent of apples. I am drowsing off. I cannot rub the strangeness from my sight I got from looking through a pane of glass I skimmed this morning from the drinking trough and held against the world of hoary grass. It melted, and I let it fall and break. But I was well upon my way to sleep before it fell, and I could tell what form my dreaming was about to take. Magnified apples appear and disappear, stem end and blossom end, and every fleck of russet showing clear. My instep arch not only keeps the ache, it keeps the pressure of a ladder round. I feel the ladder sway as the boughs bend, and I keep hearing from the cellar bin the rumbling sound of load on load of apples coming in. For I have had too much of apple picking. I am overtired of the great harvest I myself desired. There were 10,000,000 fruit to touch, cherish in hand, lift down, and not let fall. For all that struck the earth, no matter if not bruised or spiked with stubble, went surely to the cider apple heap, as of no worth. One can see what will trouble this sleep of mine, whatever sleep it is. Were he not gone, the woodchuck would say whether it's like his long sleep, as I describe its coming on, or just some human sleep.
I'm Jean Stevens from Westport, Connecticut. I'm reading Fresh Cut Grass by Stuart Kestenbaum, who recently retired as Maine's Poet Laureate. I've always thought of baseball as a spring sport, spring training, new grass, potential for a perfect season, and yet baseball is a fall sport as well. The playoffs and the World Series, a time to harvest what has been sown in the spring. I love imagining being a skinny left-handed kid playing for the Yankees as they win this year's World Series. Fresh Cut Grass by Stuart Kestenbaum. This is where my great career as a second baseman will begin, between the rhododendron that makes a hiding place next to the brick wall of our home and the sloping yard rolling downhill to the slate sidewalk. On the far end, the big silver maple that once guarded the old house of our ancient neighbor who died there, and close by, the curb with the storm sewer where all balls eventually find their way. My glove is ready, the Stan Musial four-fingered model that I've prepped over the winter, the way my big brother does, oiled with the ball in place and a belt fastened around it to make the perfect pocket. I'm ready for the game. I want to wear this glove to break it in so that the leather will be blackened and shiny and I will catch everything, the short hop, hard grounders, the line drives. That I am skinny and left-handed may be a drawback for my prospects of being an infielder for the Yankees, but it's not stopping me now. I throw the ball in the air. I run under it, calling off all the imaginary teammates. It's rising in the sky in this stadium, this white planet of possibility I'm searching for in the vast blue sky.
I'm Nicole Benevenia from Durham, New Hampshire, and I'm so glad to join the community readers for this episode with the talented Sam DeFlitch. As I record this in Kittery Point, I am 9 weeks out from giving birth to our first child, Francis. He is certainly a harvest of love, labor, and waiting. One of Francis's favorite things to stare at is the final page of The Very Hungry Caterpillar by Eric Carle, with the newly unfurled butterfly. I chose the poem Monarch by James Cruz because in this season, we are indeed leaving the skins of our old lives behind. Monarch by James Cruz. The butterfly does not break free triumphant. Once it claws through the chrysalis, it stands there shivering, new wings aching, as they slowly fill with blood. It must keep its tiny eyes shut tight at first against the brightness and shimmer of a world it has never seen before, not like this. It must listen until a deeper voice whispers, The flowers are waiting. Leave the skin of the old life far behind. Open your eyes and give in to the blue air that will carry you everywhere you need to go.
Thank you, Rebecca Hennessy, Asher Littlefield, Jean Stevens, and Nicole Benevenia for your poems and your voices. And thank you, Mike Effenberger, for your beautiful music. Sam, we look forward to holding your second book in our hands. Please join us for episode 9 on December 16th. Featuring special guest L.R. Berger, together with Native American flautist Jonathan Pritchard, community readers Elizabeth Ontalik, David Frainer, Mimi White, and Kathy Wolf will also be with us. A special thanks to Rice Public Library Director Lee Perkins and the Board of Directors for their ongoing support for this project. We're excited about the library renovation and expansion underway, and look forward to gathering in the spring when the new, fully accessible building will be open to the public. This episode of Rice Pudding Poetry has been engineered by Douglas Green. We're also grateful to Sophie Green for the Rice Pudding icon art, which you can see on Facebook, find us there, and on Spotify, where you can listen to our show by searching for Rice Pudding Poetry. Our theme music is Pussyhat, composed by Kent Allen and Joyce Anderson. I'm Kimberly Green, and I'm most thankful for you, dear listeners, near and far. We hope this helping of Rice Pudding Poetry has been nourishing for all the good work you do in the world. It will be good to be together again on December 16th. Bye for now.